Our next guest is a sportscaster with Comcast Sports out in the Northwest here. She has worked her way up through a couple of different outlets through the course of her young career and already accomplished an awful lot. She did some things at ESPN, ESPN Magazine. She's, again, really, really accomplished a lot in her brief journalism career. And she has a story to tell here, which is going to be very interesting, about covering the national championship game in Glendale. I talked to her about this off-air last night, and I subsequently went back and took a look at how unlikely it would be for somebody with such ties to both teams to be covering the national championship game this year, because it's a very, very unlikely matchup. We'll talk about it with her. We'll talk about some other subjects as well. I speak, of course, of Lindsay McCormick. Lindsay, pleasure to have you on the FDH Lounge tonight. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Oh, fine, thanks. It's great to have you on. I subsequently last night, after we talked off air, I went and I quantified this here. I looked it up just to see how unlikely it would be for you, with your ties to these two schools, for them to be beating in the national championship game. There's a couple different ways of looking at it. One is Auburn, and I got odds quoted to me today by our FDH Lounge odds maker, Nate Noy. He quoted me that Auburn was 50-1 to win the national championship before the season, Oregon 18-1. But here's another measure also. Preseason rankings. Auburn was 22 in the AP, Oregon was 11. Here's what it was going all the way back to 98. Last year, the teams were 5-2. In 2008, it was 5-4. Prior to that, 2-10, 8-1, 2-1, 1-2, 14-1, 13-1, 2-4, 19-2, 1-13, 10-2. So in other words, some teams, some years, come from not exactly out of nowhere, but a little further back in the pack. Nobody ever comes from – never is there a case of two teams coming from this far back. This is the first time since the BCS started in 98 that you didn't have a team in the top 10 that made the national championship game. Again, long story short, had anybody told you on Labor Day you would be covering in Glendale Oregon and Auburn, you're an Auburn alum and follow the school closely and have ties there, and you cover Oregon now, you would have had them drug tested if they would have told you that, and yet here you are.
I know. My dad and I were joking about it a few weeks into the season after we kind of started to get a preview of the teams, and I guess it was we were getting ready for the Oregon-Tennessee matchup, and my dad and I were laughing and joking, like, how cool would it be if we got to see the SEC in the national championship game against the Pac-10, and we were like, what if it was Auburn and Oregon? And, I mean, it was so far-fetched. We didn't know that this would actually become a reality.
It's unbelievable, and it has come to pass. And you know, ultimately, there are probably very few people that are as qualified to speak on this as far as a matchup of the teams and how they're going. I mean, you're following one intensely on a fan level. Of course, you covered Auburn. I know the program when you were going through there. I'm sure there's been, you know, quite a turnover in players since then. But obviously, you've been following them very closely. And then Oregon, it's your job, so obviously you're following it very closely there. What are some of your thoughts as far as how they match up? Everybody's anticipating this mammoth track meet. You know, from your perspective of looking at both of them so carefully, what are some of the things you're looking at?
Well, it is unique because I do get to hear what all the Oregon fans are saying now living here. But my keys to this game are, first of all, the turnover battle. You know, Oregon's one of the best teams in the country at forcing turnovers. But on the other hand, Auburn has only turned the ball over a few times this season. And Cam Newton alone has only lost one fumble in 488 touches. So, and plus, the guys only had 6 interceptions. So I think that's going to be interesting. Auburn can't make mistakes in this game or else Oregon's going to capitalize on it. And Auburn hasn't made mistakes all season, so in my opinion, why would they start now? I mean, I guess the pressure of the national championship game could force them to do so. But the one game that was interesting, because Oregon has been so good about forcing turnovers, was they kind of struggled in the game against Cal. They only recovered one single fumble in that game, and they also had a turnover of their own. So I think whoever wins the turnover battle in this game, that'll be a big key to it. Also, the size and the speed of the, both teams. I went home. I had the luxury of going home for 2 days over the holiday break this past weekend, and my dad was joking because I come from a large sports family. My grandpa played football. He was a star defensive end at University of Illinois and then was drafted by the Redskins. And so my whole family revolves around sports, and especially holidays. So I'm at home, and my dad's comparing all the different players on the Oregon and the Auburn teams, and they're 40 times. And he's like, they're very, very comparable. They're very similar. He's like, here, all these Oregon fans are talking about how their team is much faster than Auburn. But he's like, I've got all the stats right in front of me, and he's like, they're very similar, more so than people think. And another thing that I found that was really interesting in terms of timing is that Auburn usually has 20 seconds between each play called, and Oregon has 15 seconds between each play called. So I know Auburn in practice this week has been trying to kind of get a little bit quicker in terms of calling plays. Also, I think another huge key to this game will be Cam Newton. You know, it's just the leadership factor. It's the it factor. I mean, it works for Tim Tebow. It works for Vince Young. Why wouldn't it work for someone who's been such a tremendous leader and has had that it factor all season long? And, you know, his stats are unreal. They're the equivalent of Darren Thomas's in the air and almost LaMichael James's on the ground. So I think that'll be ultimately what it comes down to, is which team can win the turnover battle, and Cam Newton and his it factor.
You know, it's a thing too, and those are excellent points, Lindsay, and a couple things that I hadn't thought of, admittedly. Some of the things that have occurred to me in looking at this, when you look at momentum and strength of schedule, those are both things I think that favor your alma mater. Oregon was the team that was really riding high earlier on. I'm not going to say that they necessarily fell off later in the season. They haven't lost a game yet. But as far as who looked more impressive over the last 6 weeks, I think it would certainly be Auburn. And then also strength of schedule, too. I mean, Oregon going undefeated in the Pac-10, pretty darn good. Somebody going undefeated in the SEC, I mean, year after year, I keep expecting that meat grinder to get somebody, and it did as recently as 2007, but this is now 3 years in a row. Somebody's come out of that conference undefeated, and, you know, those two things in particular really, I think, favor the Tigers.
I do, too. Another thing that I found that's interesting living in Oregon is everybody, I feel like the most common thing that Oregon fans are saying is, well, Auburn's defense isn't a typical tough SEC defense. You know, they're not going to be able to stop LaMichael James. And well, the answer to that would be, oh, really? Well, South Carolina, Lattimore, they did a pretty good job stopping him, holding him to 30 yards on the ground the first game and then 70 yards on the ground in the second game. And the biggest run Auburn gave up all season was against Clemson for 32 yards. So I consider Lattimore to be pretty high up there in terms of running backs. And, I mean, I'm not sure if he is the equivalent of LaMichael James, but I'd sure say he's pretty close.
Oh, absolutely. You know, just the skill position players on both teams and, you know, the speed, and as your dad pointed out about that, a lot of speed to burn on both sides, it's really going to be kind of a treat for a game. One of the things that was jumping out at me when I was doing this research, just to pin down how unlikely this was about these teams making it there, it struck me that many of the teams that had been double digits in the polls coming into the season and made it to the national championship game, second-year coaches. 2000, Oklahoma, Bob Stoops, they were 19th in the preseason rankings. 2002, Trussell in Ohio State were 13th. In 2006, Urban Meyer and Florida, they were eighth. To that you add, eighth is not double digits, but they still weren't exactly way up there. But to that you now add Gene Chizik and Auburn being 22nd. Clearly out of all of those, Gene Chizik, the most unlikely of names. There was a storm of controversy when he got hired there. I got to admit, I'm one of the idiots that thought they should have hired Turner Gill at the time. I have to come clean about stuff on this show an awful lot. I told Charlie Casserly when he was on, hey, I thought it was idiotic. He didn't take Reggie Bush. My bad. You know, to that I have to add Gene Chizik. You know, to all of you who are alums of that, Auburn did the right thing. Now I don't know where you were on that. I don't know where how much in favor of that you were at the time.
Well, I was hesitant. I mean, I did think that Turner Gill would have made a good fit, but I also wasn't – I was kind of on the fence with it. I knew that Auburn wanted to hire someone within the family, and Chizik had been a coordinator there prior the year that Auburn was undefeated but didn't go to the national championship. And then I remembered Chizik being at Texas as a coordinator whenever they won the national championship, you know, and he didn't have a great run as a head coach, but look at the talent. I mean, he was at Iowa State. He didn't have the talent that he would have if he was a head coach in an SEC team. So I was hesitant, but I knew that he had a great track record as a coordinator and had some familiarity with the SEC schools and with Auburn in particular.
Yeah, and ultimately it's worked out pretty well for them in that regard. In terms of the matchup itself, and I know you're probably prohibited from, or not necessarily prohibited, but obviously I guess it would be probably strongly discouraged to get into the prediction game. That's why Kirk Herbstreit can't make predictions on the games that he's covering every week. But essentially, any more sense that you have as far as that on the outcome, as far as who you think may have the upper hand?
I realize you got to choose your words carefully on this. I think it's going to be interesting because you're right. Strength of schedule does play a huge role in this game leading up to this game. But how much better is the SEC than the other conferences is what I'm anxious to find out in this game.
Okay. Does that seem something of an open question to you based on the way that they've played this year? Because it to the naked eye, it seems like the SEC, Bama was down slightly from what we thought. Florida was off, but, you know, then again, South Carolina was a little better than we thought they might have been. And Arkansas was up from last year. I mean, it seems to me like it all kind of evens out, and the SEC is generally the top dog coming in. And now, then again, you saw a lot more of the Pac-10 than I did. So if you have any sense whatsoever that might be a little closer than most people think, is that because you think the Pac-10 had a pretty good year?
I do think the Pac-10 had a very good year, especially offensively like they typically do. But I think ultimately when it comes down to comparing the conferences, the SEC players, I don't know why it is, but they just tend to be bigger, stronger, and faster. And size-wise, Auburn is a bigger, stronger team. I know the Pac-10 and Oregon has the speed advantage, and that's what they're saying. But I don't know. Auburn's pretty fast, I would say. So I think speed-wise, they're pretty comparable. But size-wise, I think Auburn wins that.
Yeah, I think that's that's something that a lot of people would agree with as well. My sense going in, Auburn's favored by a couple. I'm definitely in the whole lay the points camp myself, looking at this. But it's just it does figure to be an epic game. Before, because there's a couple other things that I want to get to with you subject wise. I know the way that things have been going with the Portland Trail Blazers and everything else, but. I like to do things as much as we can on this show with, kind of smooth segues. It seems like if we're to do that, if we're to go to the, choosing words wisely subject here, the next thing probably to get to would be, as I talked about earlier in the show when I was setting up the number of things I wanted to talk about you with, a Google search of your name, obviously, turns up some things here in recent months. Your friendship with Mark Sanchez that has gotten reported on, sensationalized, et cetera. So, anything at all that you'd like to talk about with it, I'm going to leave that completely up to you, whether it be media coverage of such things, the culture of sensationalization, anything as far as credence of anything that you would like to put out there as far as your experience with that, the coverage of it, and what that's been like.
Wow. I think that just the media in general, find it very fascinating that they are so fascinated with a story that if we had been dating, which we weren't, we're just friends, but if we had been dating, it's two single individuals who are about the same age, and there wasn't really a controversy there. It wasn't like, I know the Jets had in the past had some problems with reporters in the locker room that they supposedly harassed, and then the whole Brett Favre and Jim Sturger issue. And those had different elements to them. You know, Favre was married, and she was an employee of the organization. But it was amazing to me how, yet they didn't have proof, but yet somehow it was, I ended up being the number one Google search item of the day on Google. And it just amazes me how people are so fascinated with pop culture and how sports is now crossing that line and becoming part of entertainment culture. And it's very fascinating. And I guess maybe it has to do with the fact that Mark has had such a great second year with the Jets, and he's becoming the next, I guess, Broadway Joe, and they've made it into the playoffs. But I just was very fascinated with how the media was fascinated by something that wasn't very controversial.
Well, you know what? I actually, it's strange. I had the same thought that you did on that, because you've not been an employee of the Jets. It's a thing where, and, you know, and again, the Jen Sturger thing, I mean, in her case, it was something that was done to her, at least allegedly. But, you know, if anything had been, you know, consensual, well, obviously Favre's married, so you got a problem there. But that would have been problematic, right, as far as covering that. But you don't cover Mark Sanchez. There's not a conflict, right, of interest there. So, yeah, it does seem to be really kind of blowing it up. And, you know, other than a culture of sensationalization, you know, there's no reason even to give it a lot of credence, it seems like. There's nothing in terms of a scandal professionally, even had there been any credence.
Mm-hmm. I guess just people are fascinated with, I mean, I know now Tony Romo's engaged to the Gossip Girl star's little sister, and that's been making tabloids lately. And I guess everybody idolizes these quarterbacks of these different teams, and I'm happy that sports is, people who normally wouldn't watch sports are starting to tune in to see these quarterbacks and these different so-called celebrities like Terrell Owens and Ocho Cinco, because they have made that jump to entertainment as well. And ultimately, at the end of the day, sports are part of entertainment. So I think it's, on a positive note, I think that it's neat that I think it's neat that people that normally wouldn't watch sports are now tuning in because of people like Mark and people like Terrell Owens.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I mean, sports and celebrity are kind of becoming converged, kind of conflated with one another and everything. But before I ask you some more straight sports coverage stuff here, I'd also like to get your thoughts from your times working at ESPN, coming up the ladder as you did there. You know, anybody that reads Deadspin, and that's probably most of us out there, have seen how they've been flogging that this unauthorized book about ESPN is coming out in the next couple of months here. And I was just amazed the first time I heard about that, because there was such a S-storm, so to speak, when that first one came out in the mid-90s, you know, and it was a different time, you know, and you're thinking things are so politically correct since then. Corporations clearly take pains to make sure stuff doesn't happen. So I'm shocked just from the outside that a book like this is coming out and is going to be possible based on circumstances. I won't put you on the spot. I won't ask for specifics, but is it your general sense that there might be some people that might have to make some damage control phone calls before this book comes out, or would even that be a surprise to you?
I think with any company, you're going to have drama within the company, and I think especially in a company that's as large as ESPN, I mean, the chances of having stories and things happening within the company are more likely, especially when it's as large as someone like ESPN. ESPN has a really great team of lawyers and publicists, and I'm sure that they won't have a problem with damage control. They are the worldwide leader in sports, but as far as any company having dirt, it wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You know, and in a place that big, there's always bound to be some things and some directives that get ignored and everything like that. I just, you know, like all the other dirt mongers of the world, I'll be out there to buy my copy of the book the first day it comes out. I can't wait to see what's going to be in there. But all right, now that we got some of those obligatory things out of the way here, back on to sports. I was telling you off air here We've got a segment. We did it for the first time last week here called Those Damn Hipsters. The full name of it is Those Damn Hipsters with Kyle Ross, one of our cast members here, and he sits in judgment. And he told me that I had some latent hipster tendencies, largely because I have believed in the Portland Trail Blazers the last couple of years, thought they were going to make the West Finals, still think LaMarcus Aldridge is a legitimate top 30 player in the league, if not better than that. So I've been a believer in this team. You cover this team. They're kind of falling apart, at least relative to what we expected here. They're looking more like a playoff bubble team at the moment. By the way, that really shows you the difference between the East and the West, because my Cleveland Cavaliers, as god-awful as they were a playoff bubble team in the East until about 5 minutes ago. Portland is a respectable team, and they're struggling to stay above water in the West, but what are some things about this team? You know, do you think it basically, you know, if anybody believes in this squad, I mean, do you think it's as hipsterish as that to think that this team can pull it together and can really be something in the medium to long term?
I do. I think maybe they'll have to go back to rebuilding. I mean, I know Rich Cho, the GM of the team, he decided to just forego using the $3.3 million trade exception that we got for Greg Oden and his injury. And he said that he had discussed with a few different teams maybe possibly making a trade, but nothing fancy to him, and he didn't find anything he liked. So it's nice to know that our GM isn't just going to use that money to use it. He's actually looking out for the well-being of the team and taking his time and putting this team together. But I feel like you said, the injury bug just keeps biting. And tonight we got even more bad news that Marcus Camby, one of my favorite players, he sprained his ankle last night, and so he didn't get to play tonight against Denver. And hopefully he'll be back when the team faces Utah at home on Thursday night. But it just feels like the team is cursed or jinxed, and it's just one injury after the other. And I remember one game this season, we were all sitting on press row, and I think three different players were out with minor injuries. And we just saw them go down one at a time. And Brandon Roy was already out because of his knees, and we're just looking at each other like, "What do you do at this point?" We're just like, "Oh, it just seems like eventually it's got to go up."
You know,
but I feel like
it's weird because
and Brandon Roy, yeah.
Yeah, they seemed, you know, it's weird. The last couple of years, they've really kind of seemed to be deep to me. You know, I thought that they had a lot of guys who could really get it done. And they've had some turnover, you know, and guys like Outlaw have come and gone and everything like that. But, you know, it goes beyond Oden and Roy and the rest of them. You know, some of the international guys haven't worked out so well. Jared Bayless, for whatever reason, and I've been called a hipster for thinking that guy's got some potential, you know, but he's been allowed to get away there. I mean, I look at that roster now, it does not look nearly as deep as I used to think it was. It's just it's one of those things where, you know, maybe imperceptible to the naked eye as it happens, you know, but, you know, you look at the roster in the middle of the season, it's like, holy crap, where's all the guys they had that, you know, I thought could be part of a winning team here at some point.
Right. And it is interesting to see, and you and I both talked about LaMarcus Aldridge, and tonight he was starting at center, so he pretty much does it all offensively and defensively, and it is interesting to see just the lineup change so much within one season.
Yeah, it is remarkable. I mean, I'm looking at their depth chart right now, and yeah, I mean, it's there's really a lot of turnover from what it's been the last couple of years, and yeah, I mean, looking at the roster as it stands now, yeah, I wouldn't have forecast nearly such great things for them coming into the season as what I thought it was going to be. But is it reaching a point here? I know Oden, he's going to be up at the end of the year, and they're going to have to really swallow hard on that one before they look at bringing him back because, you know, I always thought it was just superstition the way everybody threw the Sam Bowie stuff around. But yeah, I did see him at Ohio State, and he was pretty banged up when he was there, so he did have the comparable history, I suppose. And so far, he's looked a lot like Sam Bowie, for better and mostly for worse. But you got Roy, who's been kind of banged up. I mean, are they looking at a window here over the next year or two or whatever where, you know, it really might be put up or shut up?
It's it's a tough one with both of them because Roy, you know, everyone in the city loves Roy. He's a franchise player, but Roy's knees, we've been hearing they're bone on bone, and it's kind of like he, and you hear different players like Ron Artest that have played against him and are saying, you know, he's not the Roy of old, he's not the same old all-star, and it's just kind of discouraging for, I'm sure, for the team and all the players around him as well as the fans. And then you have someone like Greg Oden who has, it just seems like he can't catch a break, but do you let him go at the end of the season and then see him be successful with another team? I mean, it's a tough decision that Rich Cho's going to have to make, and I'm glad I'm not the one to make that decision.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, organizationally, they're pretty lucky not to have although I did think it was kind of weird the way the last guy got broken off at the time of the draft, but they're going to be kind of lucky not to have the guy in there who made the draft pick of Oden over Kevin Durant, because I think it's horse crap. I think it's 2020 hindsight. I think anybody with a brain would have taken Greg Oden at the time, because you have to. Those guys are so rare, and we all knew how great Durant was, and that's not a surprise. But it's to me, it's nothing but sheer 2020 hindsight the way they get piled on. But you know how it works, Lindsay. Politics comes into it an awful lot. It's going to be easier for the guy that didn't make the pick to make the hard call if he's got to let him go at the end of the year.
Right.
So yeah, that's going to be something to look at, but it's really going to be interesting to see how that goes. Are there a lot of concerns about Brandon Roy's long term health here? You know, when you look at how he was at the end of last year and everything, and a little bit of a carryover with injuries here, is it just a sense that given enough time he's going to be okay, or are people there starting to chatter a little bit about him too?
It's been interesting to see how the fans have turned on Brandon Roy here. And everybody's like, well, trade Brandon Roy, get rid of him. Well, you can't really, who's going to want to pick up Brandon Roy if we don't know what his history in the league is going to, his future in the league is going to be. If someone's been injected since high school, which is what we're hearing, and they're bone on bone, That situation itself almost sounds worse than Greg Oden's situation, where he was able to heal completely from the first injury and just had bad luck to receive another injury. But I think Greg Oden is young enough that he's going to be able to fully recover, and he's going to have a long future in the NBA. But as far as Brandon Roy, what we're hearing around here in Portland isn't very good, and he was out for 3 games, and then they reevaluated him, and now he's been out for another 3, and now they're supposed to reevaluate him tomorrow or Thursday when the team gets back in town. And I feel like the next thing we're going to hear is he's going to be out for 3 more games, and then they're going to reevaluate him again. And it's just kind of, it's kind of like they're not being honest with us.
Well, you know, that's going to be very difficult to try to make a judgment there. Yeah, if it's that cloudy. But as far as it goes, from my perspective as a Cavs fan, beggars can't be choosers. Lindsay, we got a big fat trade exemption. Have your GM call my GM. You need something to do with Brandon Roy. I got an answer for you. But if only it were that simple, huh?
Exactly.
Well. It's been a pleasure having you on, Lindsay, and I know that, again, you got a lot of great things going out there with Comcast Sports out in the Northwest there with your coverage of the Oregon Ducks, with the Portland Trail Blazers. We always give our guests a chance to plug. Please take it away. Anything else that the people should know about anything you got going on right now?
Well, right now I'm getting ready to turn my focus from Blazers to the national championship game. I'll head out there next week, and I'll be on Game Day, which is on Comcast Sportsnet, and it'll be 2.5 hours prior to the national championship game. It'll be fun. We're interviewing. I'm in charge of interviewing a lot of the Auburn players. I think it's because, I don't know, they think I'll have an inside scoop, which I will, because I've attended class with a lot of these guys, and I've known them. One of the first guys I met at school was Jerrod Powers, who now is the cornerback for the Colts. This will be his second year in the league, and he's injured right now, and he'll be at the game as well. And it'll be kind of like a reunion for me, so it'll be neat. That'll be game day prior to the game on Comcast Sportsnet. And then you can follow me on Twitter at LindsayM_CSN, as well as I have a blog on the Comcast Sportsnet website. And I'm just constantly on the move. So just follow me on Twitter, and I'll keep you updated that way. And then The Fan, if you have Comcast Sportsnet, it's on from 3 to 6, Monday through Friday. And we're simulcast with ESPN 1080, the radio show with Isaac and Souk. So you'll get to hear them on the show as well.
Okay. And we've also, in addition to that, we've got a link on our rundown on our blog here tonight to your personal website there at lindsaymccormick.com, and some impressive work, some great broadcast examples on there and everything. And, obviously you're doing a very great job with all of your coverage, Lindsay. It was a pleasure to have you on. It's great to have somebody on with us who can talk about a lot of different subjects here. And it was every bit as fun as I thought it would be. I hope you have a great time out there for the national championship game. Again, it's just once in a lifetime for you, having a connection to two teams this unlikely at the beginning of the year, making it this far. Enjoy the moment. You know, it's going to be very unique. It was a pleasure to have you on. We'd love to have you back on anytime.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Lindsay McCormick, everyone, from Comcast Sports. Pleasure to have her on the FDH Lounge here tonight.